The People's Climate March is massive. And are you missing an action on the climate and environment? Coming up next. And welcome to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition for September 25th, 2014. I'm Esther Avaram. On the Ground lifts up voices of activists and activism on WPFW 89.3, your station for jazz and justice in the nation's capital. Today, our coverage of the historic People's Climate March this past Sunday in New York City. Up to 400,000 people marched throughout the streets of Midtown Manhattan in the largest mobilization ever of people demanding immediate action on climate change. We'll hear voices of people from the DMV who traveled to New York for the march. We'll hear from students, workers, people concerned about hunger and how we get our food, people concerned about environmental justice and the links between that and economic justice, how humans are impacting wildlife and our very survival. But first, our headlines. World leaders have wrapped up a one-day United Nations summit on climate change with pledges to tackle global warming, but no binding commitments. On Tuesday, world leaders set goals including stopping tropical deforestation by 2030, improving food production, and increasing the number of electric cars on the roads. Yet no movement was made on how to slow global warming and keep the rise in ocean temperatures below 2 degrees. More than 30 countries set a deadline to end deforestation by 2030, but Brazil, which has the largest continuous rainforest in the world, refused to sign on, saying the plan conflicts with its own laws and targets. The gathering comes as part of talks ahead of a 200-nation summit in Paris in 2015 aimed at finalizing an agreement to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And thousands of people have rallied in Tokyo to protest the Japanese government's plan to restart two nuclear power plants. The two plants are among dozens slated for resumption after being shut down in the wake of the Fukushima disaster 2 years ago. A new warning says the Ebola outbreak in West Africa could reach as many as 21,000 people by the end of the month. A worst-case scenario from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the epidemic could hit up to 1.4 million people by January 20th. A best-case scenario predicts the epidemic could be almost wiped out by January if drastic action is taken today. The CDC says there is likely around 2.5 times as many cases today as are being reported. The U.S.-led bombing of militant targets inside Syria continues as Pentagon officials acknowledge a military mission that could take years. The United States has launched hundreds of strikes on Islamic State targets. Historian and geopolitical analyst Gerald Horn told RT News that the strikes are illegal and can further destabilize the Middle East.
It's clear that what has happened in Syria is a clear and naked act of aggression insofar as it violates the United Nations Charter. Let us say hypothetically that Cuba would like to bomb southern Florida because it's well known that acts of terror are being perpetrated against Cuba from southern Florida. That would, of course, bring howls of outrage from the United States of America. It's also clear, as the Iranian foreign minister said some days ago, that in some ways this coalition that's attacking Syria is the coalition of repentance. That is to say that they helped to create this Frankenstein monster, the so-called Islamic State, not least because they wanted to destabilize the Damascus-based regime of President al-Assad. And now the Frankenstein monster is turning on themselves. But there is a more devious plot involved as well. Recall that what happened a few years ago in Libya, when under the cover of a United Nations resolution and under the cover of protecting civilians, the United States engaged in regime change. They're trying the same plot once again. That is to say, under the cover of attacking Islamic State, their devious plot is to engage in regime change and oust the al-Assad regime. This is in part an outgrowth of the fact that the tail is wagging the dog. That is to say, the Israeli lobby in the United States and the Saudis in particular are hostile to Iran and Syria and Hezbollah, the so-called axis of resistance. They would like to weaken this axis of resistance by number one, attacking the Damascus-based regime, and then going on from there to undermine the regime in Iran.
That was Gerald Horn speaking on RT. Despite talk of an international coalition, the New York Times reports the United States is carrying out the vast majority of airstrikes from its warplanes and naval carrier. Here in the U.S., New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio has voiced words of support for the climate activists arrested in Monday's mass protest in the heart of Wall Street. More than 100 people were detained as part of the Flood Wall Street action targeting the financial sector's role in the extractive industries fueling global warming. On Tuesday, Mayor de Blasio said the demonstrators called attention to an urgent issue. In Oklahoma, a third law enforcement officer has been accused of sexually assaulting women while on duty. Tulsa County Deputy Gerald Knuckles has resigned following his arrest on Tuesday for allegedly assaulting two women while responding to a 911 hang-up call. It is believed he may have assaulted at least five other victims. His arrest came a day after Oklahoma State Trooper Eric Roberts was arrested for allegedly sexually assaulting three women while on duty. Last month, Oklahoma City Police Officer Daniel Holzclaw was accused of sexually assaulting eight women, all of them African American. In D.C., protesters turned out yesterday to shame the Congressional Black Caucus for what they said was a failure to legislate to address the concerns of the African American community. Key organizer for the protest, Asantewa Nkrumah Touré, told Euronews that the protest was prompted by the fact that members of the CBC supported Israel's attack on Gaza, as well as supported supplying military weapons to police departments like in Ferguson, Missouri, where police used the heavy weaponry against peaceful protesters after the police killing of unarmed teenager Michael Brown.
Okay. From Ferguson to Palestine,
occupation is a crime.
From Ferguson to Palestine,
we are here today to shame, publicly shame, the Congressional Black Caucus for being, for showing us misleadership regarding issues of social justice and some of the most critical issues of our time. What really sparked this particular event today is that back in July, when Israel began another series of deadly bombings in Gaza, the Congressional Black Caucus supported a resolution, House Resolution 657, basically saying that Israel had a right to self-defense. Now, while it was just a resolution, it was not legislation to be passed and make a law. It was very significant in terms of symbolizing their continued support for Zionist apartheid Israel. And we want to say that Israel is an apartheid state. It's a racist state, not only toward Palestinians on occupied Palestinian land, but it's also apartheid and racism against African immigrants in Israel as well.
Human Rights Watch has found Israel committed war crimes by attacking schools where displaced residents were sheltering in Gaza. And those are our headlines for today. When we come back, voices from the DMV and beyond at Sunday's People's Climate March. Stay with us. Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition here on 89.3 WPFW. I'm Esther Rivera. I'm reaching you today from the Furious Flower Poetry Conference in James Madison University in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Mike Nasella is in our Washington studio. Hopefully we can bring you some sounds and voices from this poetry conference in the coming weeks. Well, activists and organizers of Sunday's massive climate march say that in addition to the upwards of 400,000 people who jammed the streets of Midtown Manhattan, there were more than 2,600 events in more than 160 countries. I traveled to the People's Climate March with the healthcare workers of 1199 SEIU and marched in the labor section of the march. These first voices we'll hear today are from the people in that hub of the march, voices of people from the DMV who traveled to New York for the march, and also other folks. So let's hear those voices now.
Demetria Smith.
And where do you work?
I work at Prince George's Hospital Center.
Okay, what do you do there?
I'm a nutrition technician. I've been there for 18 years.
Oh, okay. So why did you come out to the march today?
Well, I came out because I want to make a difference in the climate. I want to let the government know that we need some change in this weather, because I want my grandchildren to continue to live on this earth.
My name's Linda Anderson. I'm from Washington, D.C., Georgetown University MedStar. I came out to support 1199 and for World to Save Our Planet for future generations to come, and we all need to clean up the environment. Climate change, global warming, the melting of, you know, the glaciers and the ice, and just for the future of the planet, green environment, all of that.
My name is Deborah Odom. I'm from Baltimore, Maryland. We need a clean climate, because after a while, the ozone is really going to tear down. We're not going to have a place to live, food to grow, water to drink.
Is this a grandchild?
Great-grandbaby.
And what's her name?
Her name is Sage.
Okay. So I guess partly you're motivated to come out for her.
That's right, for my next generation, the generation after her.
Adeyemi Bandeli, Education Coordinator, 1199 SCIU, the Maryland, D.C. region.
And so why is it important for 1199 to be up here today?
I think it's important because our members are frontline workers in the area of health care, so that they are almost like a double whammy in that they are affected by the larger issues of climate change and the warming of the environment. But they're also the people who are going to have to service those who get sick as a result of this climate issue, the issue of asthma and the increase in the number of people who are asthmatic, our children who are asthmatic. These are the folk that have to deal with them. The home care workers who have to deal with people who develop lung cancer and so on and end up in these nursing homes in critical care facilities. Our members are the ones who deal with them. So they become both the victims as well as the frontline caregivers in this situation. So who else has a greater right to be involved in this issue? And those of us in the inner cities, whether it's Baltimore or Washington, etc., we've got to be concerned about the air that we breathe. We've got to be concerned about our children and hypertension and all the things that the resultant effect of this climate change issue. Our winters have become severe. And so what we have in our contracts, members are dealing with the issue of can't get to work. But one of the reasons many of them can't get to work is because we've got a crisis with, when we have snow, we have snowstorms. We just don't have regular snow any longer. And then they've got to deal with that they may either be stuck at their facilities because they're critical care and can't get home to their children. So the disruptiveness, and forgive the pun, of the trickle-down effect of climate change is impacting our members. And I'd love to see that there's so many folks who have brought their children out and so on, because quite frankly, we are not only doing this for ourselves, but more importantly, for our children.
Tell me what the people stand for.
Climate justice, climate justice.
Tell me what the people stand for.
Climate justice, climate justice.
Tell me what the people stand for.
Climate justice, climate justice.
Tell me what the merchants stand for.
Climate justice, climate justice.
Tell me what the unions stand for.
Climate justice, climate justice.
Tell me what the unions stand for.
Climate justice, climate justice.
Hey, tell me what the people stand for.
Climate justice, climate justice.
Hey, tell me what the nurses stand for.
Climate justice, climate justice.
Hey, I can't be quiet.
I'm Elizabeth Sturgis Urena. I'm from Queens, New York. I'm out here today because we gotta change everything. We gotta change everything. We need justice for people. We need justice for the planet.
Okay, and what do you do?
I'm a teacher. I work in a high school for newly arrived immigrants from all over.
And
Do you see the impacts in the population that you teach in terms of the climate, in terms of maybe where they're from and the stories that they have with their families?
Yeah, we have a lot of students that have come to this country because they can't make a living where they are. We have a lot of students from Bangladesh that's been impacted by climate change already. I work with a lot of people from the Philippines. Yeah. Thank you.
Jamie Lopez, Queens, New York. Right now, this is a labor arts coalition. And what we have here is a representation of a future city and the green technology that it has already and could hold. So what we've done here is we set up a visioning session with like about 30 workers, union members, artists, a wide group of people. And we drew the future that we wanted. The things they would have, it didn't have. So we put them all on the board, and then we like brainstormed and spoke about it, and everybody like give their picture of their city of, you know, awesome like tree homes and crazy things like that, you know, real stuff. So, and then out of that we came out with four ideas. We said we're gonna say four ideas, and this being one of the most popular ones. So this is among others that were really, really exciting, but this took front and center. And what you got here is a bike generator powering the LED lights on the side and the sign you got right here that says, "We Build the Future," subtitled by Labor Is Ready. This is all sheet metal work done by Local 28. And Local 3 electricians lit it up with the bike generator. So we got the bike generator up top. We got battery backup. And we got a powering station in the front feeding the live stream. We're powering the live stream. We're going out right now.
Okay, and then you're being pulled by okay, and tell me about Tri-State Biodiesel.
That's a company doing cleaning. Well, they take oil from these companies, right, that are producing this oil, this all kinds of like food, you know, processed stuff that comes from those, you know, those bins. So they collect it and then they clean it and then they make biodiesel fuel. So that's a friend of one of our, you know, one of our members, and she got that hooked up. So biodiesel will pull anything that's in this. I think there's two other groups that are being pulled by biodiesel, and there's no fossil fuels pulling anything here.
Does the truck itself run on biodiesel?
Yes, it does. It carries, delivers biodiesel, and it also runs on biodiesel.
Michael Riley. I live here in Manhattan, New York, New York. We want to form alternative energies, build energy, whether it's green energy, whether it's using hydroelectric or wind power or solar or wave energy or geothermal. It can create jobs. Jobs don't need to be taken away from the current oil and gas industries. They can be converted into more productive, greener, cleaner energies. Keep the jobs, develop new jobs. It will improve the economy. It worked in Germany, where they generate sometimes up to 80% of their electricity through non-fossil fuel methods. And they've created jobs, turned around the job losses.
Are you here with a particular group?
I am with several groups, actually. I'm here with some of the animal rights groups and the food justice groups, trying to help change the way we look at farming and raising animals on the planet. But also, I am a proponent of green alternative energy.
I'm Carol from Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, and they should be arrested for crimes against the planet.
Who is that?
The Koch brothers.
Oh, read that for me.
Wanted for climate crimes, fueling catastrophic climate change, peddling fossil fuel addiction, funding junk science to deny global warming, endangering people, the planet, and our future.
You're listening to Voices from the People's Climate March on WPFW 89.3, your station for jazz and justice here in the nation's capital. In this next section, students, a representative from the contingent of indigenous peoples, and more at Sunday's march.
My name is Sanura Dewa. I'm from Maryland, but I attend Spelman College in Atlanta.
What part of Maryland?
Burtonsville.
Okay.
Are you familiar? Okay. Montgomery County. Mm-hmm. Basically, I'm here today to bring awareness to different climate change issues. So on campus, especially in HBCU campus, you really don't talk much about the environment. So being in an environment like in New York City and being surrounded by people who also share a mutual, passion for the environment is just something mind-blowing. Like, I love it. I'm glad we came. My feet hurt, but I'm glad I went through the whole thing. And it was just really beneficial to see. It's great.
So what about what I said earlier, that there are some people who are saying that your generation doesn't really care about the environment?
If anything, I think it's the opposite. I feel like the older generation really didn't pay much mind to the environment the way that us young people are. Mm-hmm. As you can see, like, if you looked at the people that were out there marching, most of them were young people, high schoolers, people in college, young adults. And it's just, we're learning about the different issues that are happening in this world today, and we're trying to figure out ways to combat them in order to sustain a Earth for longer, for our children's children and those around.
Now, you said on your campus nobody's talking about climate change. Is that, why is that, and are you trying to do something about it?
So there have been discussions, I know, on Spelman's campus where we feel that it's just not a top priority. So if at Spelman College, or I don't know, in the AUC maybe, sometimes it's just God first, family, then school, and everything else kind of trickles under that, and the environment is kind of like at the bottom of the list. And some people feel that such things as recycling is too much to go out of their way to do so, or they don't feel like doing it, and they're too lazy to do it. So I think there's just no motivation, especially when they don't see people around them doing it. That doesn't motivate them to do it as well.
Right.
I'm Chelsea Washington. I'm from Corona, California. I attend Clark Atlanta University, graduating senior. Hey. thank you. Basically, I'm out here today. We're supporting the Living Green Club, which is our club on campus that focuses on sustainability, promoting it amongst faculty and students. So we're just here, you know, looking at how many different arenas we can actually focus on when it comes to Living Green, because sustainability just encompasses so many things. So we're just here just finding out about different things and how, like, taking ideas from other organizations we've seen so we can take it to our campus and just better promote sustainability.
Your campus is where?
Clark Atlanta University. Okay. In Atlanta, Georgia.
And what ideas have you seen out here that you like?
Well, this year we're really trying to get a lot of promotions and a lot of people to notice the Living Green Club, and we see a lot of art. So we're really focusing on art this year. We've seen people make, I don't know what they are, but it's like puppets almost, or just little flags and kites, and I'm just like, that's so cool, because if it caught my eye, it'll definitely catch somebody else's eye. And we were thinking about, you know, this little, it's like a peaceful protest. We have a little thing at our school called the Promenade, and maybe doing like a little mock protests up and down the promenade, and just raise awareness, have people say, hey, like, who are you guys, what are you guys representing, and just kind of tell people about the different issues affecting this earth.
Okay, and what particularly about the issues of the environment and climate impact you, that concern you the most?
Well, hunger is definitely number one. So especially where we go to school, it's like 30 fast food chains and one grocery store, which is considered a food desert. So it's just like how to raise awareness about how to get better foods in our communities and what we should eat in our communities, because, you know, black people have the highest in, like, hypertension, diabetes, heart disease, and whatnot. So it's kind of to combat that, and also water conservation, because it makes no sense why we're paying money for bottled water and water's free and it's turning into a commodity. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay.
My name is Sadara Ross. I attend Clark Atlanta University.
Where are you from originally?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
I'm a junior chemistry major. I'm also part of the Living Green Club. I'm the president. So,
okay.
I pretty much put this trip together because I really wanted people to see, like, a different arena and be able to see how other people express themselves using the environment as a way to, like, show people that we need to stand up for ourselves and for our communities in general. Mm-hmm. So I think my biggest goal was to just pretty much expose people to that and then take this back to our school, hopefully, because we took a lot of pictures and a lot of stuff, and just show people on campus, like, what we did up here, what we learned, basically.
Yeah. When did you first get involved or interested in the environment and environmental issues?
I would say, actually, in high school, I had a chemistry teacher who ran our environmental club. So there, I got really interested in there. We tried to promote things at the school, but then I feel like once I went to college, I realized one thing that was missing there was, like, a Living Green Club. It was there before, but it really wasn't promoted as such. So I did join it, and my whole goal now is to get people on campus to really, like, see that this is something that people in our community need to do, not just for themselves, but for, like, their future and for their posterity and people who come after them, because right now we need to sustain our community, because it's falling apart. So sustainability is a key part in like building ourselves up.
Okay, thank you.
My name is Brittany Anstead, and I'm representing the Halawasa Pony people of Hollister, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. I'm also representing the East Michigan Environmental Action Council. Mm-hmm. They're a frontline communities environmental justice nonprofit in Detroit. And I'm a student at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor.
So why are you out here today?
I'm out here today to empower indigenous people like myself, youth, to not just, it's not, being here is not just about grabbing attention of the UN or heads of state. It's about empowering the youth within this march to become the heads of state, to become those who are making these decisions so that we can transition to a sustainable future. So I think it's all about empowerment of the indigenous people, of the people of color, and the frontline communities.
Have you seen any of that happen since you've been involved?
I think I'm like a story at the University of Michigan. I'm a grad student, and my master's project is doing a sustainability plan with the Little Traverse Bay Band of Odawa Indians. So, like, that's an example of me, an indigenous person, taking tools such as a university and using it to create a clean energy future within a tribe.
Okay. And so tell me about the project. What does it do?
So our project, we are focusing on three main points. So one being renewable energy siting for wind and solar. The second is an energy assessment of what they already are using now to set up a baseline. And then the other part of this is the policy or legislative part, because sovereign indigenous nations are their own government, you know. So we're looking to create clean energy legislation within the tribe to support the energy assessment and the renewable energy sitings.
And where is the tribe located?
They are in Petoskey, Michigan. It's the top of the mitten.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition on WPFW 89.3, your station for jazz and justice. I'm your host, Esther Averam. And we're listening to voices from Sunday's massive People's Climate March. When we come back, it's your turn, so you can call 202-588-0893 to comment on our topic today. What are your comments about the emerging coalition to fight climate change? What you think is needed? What must be done? What ways are you in action personally or missing in action personally to address the catastrophic climate changes happening on our planet? That'll be 202-588-0893. And I'm also interested in anyone who has comments on the Shame the CBC rally in March rally that happened yesterday. So if you want to comment on that, please comment on that as well. If you were out there, we want to hear from you. And 202-588-0893 will be the number to call. We'll be right back.
They used to be now. Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and south. Oh, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be now. Oil wasted on the oceans and upon our seas. Fish full of mercury. Oh, oh, mercy, mercy, mercy. Our things ain't what they used to be. Lights more. Radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby by our lives. Oh, mercy, mercy, mercy. All things and what they used to be. What about this overcrowded land? How much more?
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition on WPFW 89.3, your station for jazz and justice. I'm your host, Esther Averam, and We're listening to voices from Sunday's massive People's Climate March. And of course, you know, that was Mercy, Mercy Me, the Ecology by Marvin Gaye. And so it's your turn now. You can call 202-588-0893 to comment on our topics today, the People's Climate March. You know, what are your comments about the emerging coalition to fight climate change? What do you think is needed? What must be done to save? You know, I've been saying save our planet, but it's not really the planet. You know, the planet will be fine. It's humanity. It's whether humanity will survive at the rate we're going. And, you know, what ways are you, you know, in action or missing in action to address the catastrophic climate change is happening on our planet? The number to call is 202-588-0893. In the meantime, we have a few more voices from Sunday's march. We have, you know, other people we spoke to, people from, you know, other parts of the diaspora who are living here in the United States now. And let's go to one of those voices.
My name is Denise Crawford. I live in Brooklyn. I'm originally from Jamaica in the Caribbean. We have one planet, and whatever one person does affects us all, and we should all get interested, because don't wait until it's too late to try to say, oh, I shoulda, woulda, coulda. Get going now, and let the powers that be know they should stop all the things that are ruining the environment. The fracking, the nuclear power, and oil are all destroying the planet, and especially the nuclear, which every nuclear plant in the United States is on a fault line. And earthquakes are coming, and when they come, we will all fry. Only the cockroach will survive. So let's get rid of the nuke right now. There's a country, everything is green. It can work, and it's cheaper. We must get rid of the people who are interested in the energy that's poisoning us all.
Yeah, I noticed your bee umbrella. Why do you have that out here today?
Well, we're poisoning bees these days, and if we poison bees, we kill them. And without bees, human beings can't survive.
Tell me your name and where you're from.
I'm Kitty Corbett, and I'm a U.S. citizen currently living in Canada.
Oh, okay. And then are you with the frog? Tell me your name and where you're from.
Catherine Brown.
And where?
And I live in Rhode Island.
Okay, and why do you have the frog?
Well, in solidarity with bees, you know. Pesticides kill bees, and they kill frogs, and right. They kill us.
Frogs are an indicator species.
Exactly, yeah. When I grew up, there were many, many, many frogs, and now they're just a rarity. So here I am, holding my umbrella for frogs.
Okay. Thanks.
And for the climate.
You're listening to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment. You can call 202-588-0893 to weigh in on our coverage of the People's Climate March, you know, and to give your opinions about the battle to save the climate, the efforts to save the climate. You know, what ways are you acting or not acting to save the climate? What do you think should be done? 202-588-0893 is the number to call. You know, there was also some local environmental news. The Chesapeake Climate Action Network recently denounced Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe for his support for a major expansion of Dominion Power's proposal to build a pipeline to carry fracked natural gas from West Virginia across Central Virginia to North Carolina. And once this project was called the Reliability Project, the new 550-mile, $5 billion proposal is now the joint venture Atlantic Coast Pipeline. And, you know, Mike Tidwell, who we've had on the show, he had this statement in response to this support of this project. He said, today, Governor McAuliffe has made a huge mistake that harms the environment. Barely 2 months after relaunching the state's Climate Change Commission, the governor has regretfully embraced the Dominion Gas Pipeline project that threatens to contribute significantly to the climate crisis. Tom Farrell's 550-mile, $5 billion pipeline system would incentivize more fracking across the region and contribute to emissions of methane, a powerful heat-trapping gas, which, according to growing scientific data, could disrupt the climate on par with coal. In support of this project, Governor McAuliffe is now complicit with Tom Farrell in locking Virginia into a multi-billion dollar investment in more fossil fuels at a moment when scientists say we must be investing in truly carbon-free wind, solar, and energy efficiency technologies. We've come to expect this type of move from Dominion, the state's top climate polluter, and a company that has continually held Virginia back from serious commitments to clean energy. But we're downright disappointed to see this from Governor McAuliffe. In making his announcement, Governor McAuliffe failed to mention the scientific data showing that methane, which leaks from fracking wells and pipelines, is as much as 87 times more powerful than carbon dioxide in heating the atmosphere over a 20-year period. The governor is lining up on the wrong side of farmers and landowners who live along Dominion's proposed pipeline route and who see this project as a direct threat to their safety and livelihoods. The groundswell of grassroots resistance that Dominion is already facing will surely only grow in response to today's news. Given the urgency of tackling climate change, this is the wrong project at the wrong time. Instead of touting a massive investment in more communities destroyed by fracking wells, divided by pipelines, and wrecked by runaway climate change, Tom Farrell and Governor McAuliffe should be announcing a full-scale investment in Virginia's vast and barely tapped clean energy resources. And that's a statement from the Chesapeake Climate Action Network about this proposed pipeline that Virginia's governor has just announced his support of. So 202-588-0893 is the number to call today. When we come back from this musical break, we'll still be taking your calls at 202-588-0893. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. We're talking about the People's Climate March that happened on Sunday. And we have a caller. Just say your first name and where you're calling from.
My name is Diane, and I'm calling from Beltsville, Maryland.
Thank you for calling. What's your question or comment?
My comment is, as a 64-year-old woman, I was there. The earth is something my grandparents, I'm African-American, my grandparents instilled in us the closeness and the ties that we are with the earth. So this has been something that's been an issue with me for a long, I could say all my life. But being there, I just want to say spiritually, I was in the awness of the youth. I give them praise for stepping up and making noise, and I pray that they continue because we have a lot of people sound asleep.
Yeah, you know, when you were at the march, did you get a chance to talk to some of the young people?
I talked to some of the young ones that I had been walking with, and there were other older people there as well. But I was in such awness, I just talked to everybody. Anybody that wanted to carry a conversation about anything, we talked. So it was a mind-blowing experience with youth that I had never met who were willing to even hear me. You know, and how I was raised believing that the earth and I are one, and the awness from them, we just spiritually, we were there.
And when you said your parents raised you that way, were they farmers, or did you live like in a rural area where you were kind of closer to the land?
I was born in Washington, D.C., but my grandfather and grandmother came out of Starkville, Mississippi.
Wow. And what did they do there? Were they farmers?
Well, we always had food in the backyard. Whatever house we lived in, there was a garden in the backyard. Mm-hmm. We never acquired land because my grandfather lost his land in Mississippi. And that's how he got here. We got here. I was born here, his daughter. But there was always a garden somewhere. I have a little garden myself, so there's always something growing.
So it's kind of like the end of the gardening season, or is it? Are you still harvesting things from your garden?
I'm still harvesting. It's almost at the end, but I'm still harvesting. Yes.
What did you plant this year?
I have a lot of herbs going, all types from sage A to Z, as much as I can plant. I'm fortunate enough to be close by people who have apple trees, and they let me come over and collect fallen apples. And then I'm lucky also to still have a farm here. My greens, I grow in small bunches because I don't have a big family anymore. So it's basically a small garden for a single woman.
Okay, great. So thank you so much for calling, Diane.
You're welcome.
This morning, 202, and thank you for marching on Sunday. 202-588-0893. You know, speaking of Sunday, we actually have another voice we can play from the march. And I think she is from Guyana originally, but she lives here now. Let's go to her voice.
My name is Janice Rochevelle, and I'm from Brooklyn, originally from Guyana. I'm out here today to be in solidarity with all my brothers and sisters, really trying to just raise awareness about the crisis that we're in. Every, show I watch, book I read about the climate crisis, it's like reading a horror story because the stakes are so high. And we just really want to try and send the message that the stakes are high, we know they're high, but we're also prepared to do something about it. We're prepared to confront people in power so that they can actually help us to halt a lot of the crisis that's happening.
What would you like to see the UN do?
I would like to see them hold the highest producers of fossil fuel accountable. I would like to see them invest in options that are not harming those who are most impacted, poor countries, highly indebted poor countries. So those countries are the ones mostly being impacted immediately. I mean, the crisis is coming to all of us, but those are the countries that are being impacted immediately. So I would like to see them also really take to task the corporate entities that are, you know, kind of at the forefront of this, you know, causing this crisis.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. I'm Esther Rivera, and we're listening to voices from Sunday's People's Climate March in New York City, and we're also taking your calls at 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. When we come back, we'll go to another music break. We'll still be taking your call, so give us a call,
202-588-0893. WPFW proudly presents Daughter of the Struggle, written and performed by Ayanna Gregory, daughter of the civil rights activist Dick Gregory. Join us for an evening of witty, humorous theater Friday, September 26th at 7:30 p.m. There will be a post-performance discussion featuring Mr. Gregory and moderated by Denise Rolark Barnes. Tickets are $25 each or $10 per person for a group of 10 or more. To purchase tickets, call 202-588-0999, extension 344, or go to WPFWFM.org. 89.3 FM, WPFW, your station for jazz and justice.
Welcome back to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. We have actually an interesting environmental event happening tonight in the DMV. It's also put on by the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. Author George Marshall is going to be at a reception and a discussion about his new book, Don't Even Think About It, Why Our Brains Are Wired to Ignore Climate Change. And that's tonight in downtown Silver Spring. And Marshall's book is praised by critics, including Bill Nye and Bill McKibben, as a witty and groundbreaking take on one of the most urgent questions of our time. Why, despite overwhelming scientific evidence, do we still ignore climate change? With engaging stories and drawing on years of his own research, Marshall argues that the answers do not lie in the things that make us different, but rather in what we all share as human beings. And that's tonight, Thursday, from 7 to 8:30 p.m., followed by a book signing at the Silver Spring Civic Building at Veterans Plaza, 1 Veterans Place in Silver Spring. And they're going to have a reception, you know, with refreshments and come away with hopefully some solutions to be put into action. And you can sign up with the Chesapeake Action Climate Network, I think, at ChesapeakeClimate.org. So 202-588-0893. And we're going to take another break and come back and, you know, if you can call in at that number if you want to comment or have a question today.
That's the voice of the great saxophonist Henry Threadgill, reminding us of the importance of live music. Transparent Productions has been presenting the best live, free-form, and avant-garde jazz music in the D.C. area for almost two decades. We're honored that WPFW at 89.3 FM, your jazz and justice radio station, is collaborating with us by serving as the media sponsor for our upcoming 18th season. Our season, called Sundays at 7 at the Caverns, continues on Sunday, September 28th, with a performance by pianist Cooper Moore and his trio, whose music is heard underneath my voice. All performances take place at the historic Bohemian Caverns located at 2001 11th Street Northwest in the U Street section of Annis Morgan in Washington, D.C. Sets are at 7 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. You can purchase advanced tickets online at bohemiancaverns.com or find out further information at transparentproductionsdc.org. As always, 100% of the proceeds goes directly to the artists.
Live music, man, nothing but transforming life, a live music experience.
And that will do it for us on the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition. I'm Esther Avaram. Don't forget, you can join author George Marshall tonight for a reception and discussion about his new book, Don't Even Think About It, Why Our Brains Are Wired to Ignore Climate Change, in downtown Silver Spring tonight. Marshall's book is praised by critics, including Bill Nye and Bill McKibben. And that's tonight, Thursday, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Silver Spring Civic Building at Veterans Plaza, 1 Veterans Place in Silver Spring. And I think you can go to chesapeakeclimate.org for more information. Special thanks to all the marchers Sunday and who took time to speak to us. Special thanks to our engineer, Mike Nasella. And thank you so much for listening and for Diane for calling in. The website for the march, if you want to follow up and get your own information, is peoplesclimate.org. You can reach our show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can also listen to all our past shows. You can like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On the Ground Show. And remember, it's 47 days since Darren Wilson shot dead Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, and still no arrests. Now, stay tuned for Askia Muhammad with the news, followed by Chris DeProperty on the Thursday edition of Don't Forget the Blues. Raise your voice. Peace. Another thing.